is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into this Sunday divisional round edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside the three-time Super Bowl winning executive and strategist Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni with you. And yesterday, both of the top seeds got it done, albeit in very different ways. And your girl can breathe a sigh of relief that the 49ers escaped, Michael. My goodness, that was a sweat.
Yeah, that was a big-time sweat, and barely escaped. I mean, it was the kind of game we thought it would be. We thought both teams would move the football. I actually thought the scoring would be over the 50.5, and had a field goal been made here and there, it would have been. Disappointed with the Packers' last drive. I mean, Love has thrown that ball across his body so many times in the last few weeks, and I'm not sure who he's throwing that one to. I'm not sure why he just didn't take off and run, but look, and then the Niners were tested completely, and they were tested by a really good passing offense and a really good offensive line, which we talked about yesterday. We've talked, you and I, about it all week. Their ability to pass protect, their ability for Love to make plays, and, you know, there's never going to be an easy game. Right. Like, they're not playing an easy games when you get there. And I wrote this on Friday. The Packers were not a real true seven seed the way they were playing. You know, the Panther game was meaningless. The Giant game proved to be meaningless. They're a good team. They played better defensively as the year went on. And look, the Niners had to stretch everything they could to win the game. And Purdy's inability to really control the football in the rain, I think, is something we have to keep in mind down the road.
Yeah, and I told you going into this game that this was an opponent that scared me for San Francisco, sure. Rightfully so, the way that they were peaking the back end of the year. And for a guy in Jordan Love who had 21 touchdowns and one pick the previous nine games coming into this one, for Dre Greenlaw to pick him off twice ended up being so significant. And of course, that one play that sealed it late, where I was screaming at the television screen, get down, we don't need a pick six, Dre, just get down, game over. Let's move on. But to your point about Brock Purdy, he tried the glove didn't work. He was in his head about the weather all day long. For a guy who we talk about so much as being so poised and accurate and ability to place the ball exactly where his receivers need it, he was off target so much. And I feel like so much of that was just mental because of the weather, and he's had issues with it in the past. But don't worry, Michael. I looked ahead to the weather this coming Sunday for the NFC Championship. Looks like sunshine and rainbows. We should be good.
Yeah, and I also think, too, that give the Packers some credit here. It's just not the rain, right? They had a lot of pressure on him. He was getting bumped around a little bit, you know? He made some really good throws, and if you want to continue to knock the guy, continue to knock him, but he made a couple great throws. The one over the middle was outstanding, you know, when he was able, under pressure. Losing Debo, with the one to Jennings over the middle, that was outstanding. Losing Debo hurt them, and, you know, Kittle has a big drop when they don't need it, so I thought he was under some pressure. It was just more than a wet football, right? You know, the throw to McLeod, I mean, McLeod's not really played a lot, right? So he's in there, and, you know, I don't think he ran the right route, or I think he expected something else. There wasn't perfect harmony. Look, he didn't play well. I'm not defending him. He didn't play. He played well enough to win. He didn't play like we're used to seeing him play, but I actually think this challenge that Green Bay presented will be the hardest challenge that the 49ers will face up until they get to the Super Bowl. And then I'm not sure any team that gets there from the AFC will present as much of a challenge that we saw here. Baltimore will, I think. That would be the only team, because the way Love was throwing the ball, the way these receivers were getting open, and that offensive line really can pass protect. Like, when you were watching that game early against Baltimore, and I think it has some meaning here, Baltimore's offensive line was struggling to block the front of the Texans, no question. And Lamar was under constant pressure based on the blitzing. Whereas Green Bay handled it. I mean, Bosa was on an island quite a bit, and they were blocking him. I mean, Chase Young was on an island quite a bit, and they were blocking him. We didn't even hear Hargrave's name. I mean, that Packer offensive line can pass protect. And when you look at it, the 49ers registered no sacks, right? They only had six quarterback hits the entire game. The entire game. And I would say the interceptions were not a result of the rush. And so when the Niners defensive front can't control the game, which they didn't, then you're prone to being able to be beaten.
They struggled to get home. And that was something that for me as a fan was frustrating. And then also knowing on the back end that you have a complete liability in Embry Thomas. Like, the Green Bay and Jordan Love knew, just throw it in 20's direction and we're going to get a PI call. He's going to do right. something stupid. He's going to miss. He's not going to complete a tackle. Like, it was another reason of many that I was screaming at the television throughout the course of the game, Michael. But again, San Francisco does end up winning this one 24-21. They do not cover the big number. Yes, let's spin it forward.
Spin it forward. Are you going to downgrade their power ranking in your mind? No. I think this was a really hard matchup. I don't know why I kind of thought the game went the way it was. I thought the Niners would take it over later and kind of make it hard for them to catch up. I was actually disappointed that the Niners weren't able to move the ball as effectively. If you would have said to me the Niners were going to punt, four times in the game, I would have said no chance.
Yeah.
No way. I would have said no way. But they did, you know, and they missed a field goal. You know, they punted in the fourth quarter. Look, the biggest series of the game was that missed field goal. I mean, let's be clear. He makes that field goal. The over's going to hit.
Yeah.
And we're going to probably go to overtime.
Yeah, we were talking about it before the game started, though. When I heard that report from Ton Rinaldi talking about Anders Carlson and that every time he goes out to kick, Matt LaFleur puts his hands in his face and just prays. Like, that's not what you want to hear about your kicker. But yeah, that ended up being a huge moment from a betting standpoint and for Green Bay in this game, Michael.
Most of the time, except for the Dallas kicker, you know, most of the time these young kickers have to go through this, right? You know, and his brother went through it in Minnesota and they cut him. They got impatient and cut him. And now the Raiders have a Pro Bowl kicker. You know, and so, yes, it's difficult. The weather was difficult, too. That was challenging. And same thing with Moody. I mean, he gets a kick blocked. These are two of the best young kickers in football. Mm-hmm. But there's a growing strategy, and unfortunately, you don't want them to cost you the game. I'm not saying that Carlson cost them the game here. I'm not, right? You know, they had plenty of time. They had three timeouts. I think LaFleur should have called timeout after the first down run. It would have saved them 40 seconds, and then McCaffrey scored on the next play. I think he should, and he still would have had two timeouts. Because remember, when you're running a two-minute drill, you can stop the clock. Like, you don't need timeouts to stop the clock. And so when you don't use a timeout, when you let 50 seconds come off the clock like he did, or relative, then it's a real mistake. You know, because you're giving up every 6 seconds, that's a play. That's a play. That's a play. That's a play. And that becomes really hard. I felt like he needed to call a timeout at that point, and he just kind of let it go. Now, he still had 107 to go in the game, and he had timeouts. But to me, you know, there's a sense of urgency that's created. And all he needed to do was get in field goal range to at least get it to overtime. But, you know, look, one of the things you think you know you have to be able to do in playoff is when you have an opportunity to close the game out like they did with the long run that they made by Aaron Jones. And they got the ball down there in field goal range. You know, they just couldn't put the game away at that point. And that's why San Francisco is such a good team.
Well, and I think a big difference in the game, too, was, Michael, you look at this Packers team that a week ago was 4-for-4 in the red zone scoring touchdowns, and they start this game 0-for-3, have to settle for field goals. Of the 6 times that they were in 49ers territory in the red zone with an opportunity to score, they were only able to score 2 touchdowns of those 6 drives. Yeah. And so that ended up being huge. And for as much as I had an issue with a lot of things for the 49ers defense yesterday, they stood tall when they needed to in a number of those instances. And, you know, I was nervous coming into the game about Green Bay getting the ball first, driving down the field and scoring and playing from ahead. Despite them playing with a lead for the bulk of this game, San Francisco does enough to close this thing out, and they put the trend that has haunted me all week that you had been saying from day one about their fourth quarter struggles when trailing by 5 points or more. They were 0-30. They are 1-30 now. So they were able to overcome some of those fourth quarter demons when trailing, and it was necessary. And to your point about this being the most difficult challenge for San Francisco potentially in the postseason, I think because of that, how you say push it forward, whoever they play next, this was a wake-up call for them. This was a really hard-fought game, and that I don't care what the spread is next week, I'm probably going to be betting San Francisco because I think that they'll dominate.
I think they will too, and I think we saw on Saturday, we saw the number one seed start slow. I mean, that's just kind of what it is. There's a lot of time off between games. And, you know, it started slow. And that once they got momentum. Now, I think in the Baltimore case, the slow start was due to the unexpected amount of pressure that DeMeco Ryans decided defensively that he was going to instill upon the Raven offense. I don't think anybody anticipated, me included, that he was going to play a man-to-man game and he was going to blitz 69% of the time. So I think ultimately once Todd Monken decided at halftime, okay, change strategy, rhythm throws, three step, you know, we're going to get to our short passing game, get the ball out quick. And then DeMeco didn't have an adjustment to that adjustment. And then all of a sudden the Ravens took the game over. So I think slow starts are here. I was very disappointed that the 49ers weren't able to kind of get their game going. They didn't get the big play that they needed in the passing game, which is something they typically always do.
Yeah, and we'll see if they're able to do that moving forward in the NFC Championship game coming up next Sunday. They will play the winner of the Bucks and Lions coming up later on today. But because you mentioned the Ravens, when we come back from this break, we'll dive into that Ravens-Texans matchup a little bit more. Being tied 10-10 at halftime, Baltimore ends up turning the page, turns into a dominant team in the second half to win 34-10. And you said it, the Texans hadn't blitzed much this season, but in that first half, I really thought that they were making it a game and that maybe Houston might be putting the Ravens on upset watch in the second half. And obviously that's not what happened. The Ravens now the second shortest shot remaining to win the Super Bowl behind San Francisco. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. And yes, have no fear, ladies and gentlemen. There will be an SGT that is given out on the program today. And you can find it later on the picks page, along with all of our picks from our hosts and guests. Plus, if you use the Lombardi Line's promo code Lombardi, you'll get 10% off an annual subscription. For more VSiN Pro picks, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. VSiN.com/subscribe is where you can do so. Welcome back into the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And just to wrap up a couple more thoughts real quickly on San Francisco's win over Green Bay yesterday. Of course, a big talking point was the fact that Deebo Samuel was injured early in that game. There was some fear, and potentially still is, that he might have had another hairline fracture to that shoulder. We know he injured it earlier this season and it held him out for a couple of games, but at least from what I'm seeing, Michael, in early reports, there's optimism that he'll be available next week, which is very, very good for this 49ers team.
Yeah, they need him. I mean, they really need him. Now, Ayuk, I thought, was sensational. Made some really tough catches in the rain. You know, McCaffrey was great with the long run, the touchdown run. You know, he looks like his quad or something was tightening up on him, his hamstring, I'm not sure. But he kind of worked his way through it. Look, I think when you're Kyle Shanahan, you're sitting down watching this game, you're kind of worried about, you know, we got to get better offensive line play, especially pressure inside. I mean, we saw that. Purdy with Clark coming inside, Wyatt, those guys inside created a problem on the guards of the 49ers. And I think moving forward, you're going to have to handle that. If it's Detroit coming to San Francisco, the Detroit strength is their defensive front and their tackles. Hutchinson on the edge and those two tackles, McNeil moving inside, that they can power guards back. And Purdy needs a clean pocket. Yeah. He's no different than Tua. He's an undersized quarterback who needs to be able to step up into a lane to throw.
And we will preview that NFC Championship game either against the Lions or Bucks. We'll preview that divisional round game, at length today and get you set for that. As far as the 49ers right now, they are the favorite still to win the Super Bowl at plus 145. You could have gotten as high as 5-1 in game yesterday, though, when they were trailing Green Bay. The Baltimore Ravens, the second shortest shot at 2-1. And for Lamar Jackson, after a slow start in this game, you talked about it before the break, the Texans were blitzing, making him uncomfortable. He was taking a couple of big sacks. Boy, did they turn things around in the second half. They win 34-10 and advance also as a one seed to the AFC title.
Yeah, this was I thought this was a strategic struggle. You know, one of the things I think was the problem going in, and we talked about it, was the first game of the year is this Texans defensive front gave the offensive line of the Ravens a lot of trouble. And it was a problem for Lamar. And then with D'Amico Ryans deciding I'm going to blitz, I'm going to put more pressure on him, right? That became an issue too, because it was hard. He didn't have a, you know, they're trying to throw down the field routes against this pressure, and Lamar didn't have time to really make the throws, and he had to try to buy time. And give Mike Sommets credit, you know, he took the rushing total over on Lamar. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that because I felt it would be a zone game. It turned out not to be a zone game. It turned to be a man-to-man game. Sommets must have known something going on in that game planning room down in Houston, because that proved to be correct. And that allowed Lamar to run the football. But the key to the game, we said it early and we said it all week long, was Baltimore had to take away the explosive play. And they did. I mean, the longest play of the day was 29 yards. They had a, you know, every drive had to be put together perfect plays. And they put a lot of pressure on Stroud because there is no run game. You know, Singletary's 9 carries for 22 yards. You know, they had 14 rushes the entire day. And that's a close game. It's 10-10 at the half. You have 14 rushes. You're putting so much pressure on your quarterback. He's got 33 attempts for a 175. And really, the game at halftime, if it's not for the punt return, it's a 10-3 game. And at the end of the day, it's really a 31-3 game. I mean, they dominated this team. They weathered the storm strategically. They made the great adjustments, which they had to do. They had a really good game plan for the Texans. And then, of course, the penalties by the Texans, the false starts, all those things playing on the road for a young team creeped up and got them. And let's face it, the Texans are no different than any of these other Kyle Shanahan style of offensive teams. When they get behind, and they're behind by 14 points going into the second half or third quarter going into the fourth, they have no drop back pass game. They don't. They can't drop back pass, and there's just no way they're going to be able to recover, and it puts way too much pressure on the quarterback.
Both matchups against the Ravens, Houston failed to score an offensive touchdown, and we credit Mike Sommich for the take that he had on Lamar rushing the football, which again, 100 yards for him on the ground in those two big scores. But Will Hill came on the program as well, and he liked the Texans team total under 16.5, and I was like, I don't know if I can get there. CJ Stroud, everything that offense has been doing, and then lo and behold, held to just 10 first half points and shut out in the second half. So want to make sure we give another shout out for a good win here on the Lombardi line.
And I mean, really, they scored 3 points. I mean, he was right by all margin. And they typically average 19 points on the road. We knew they struggle more on the road. But in that first half, you were sitting there saying to yourself, wait a minute, is Indianapolis better than we think they are? Because Indianapolis was a bad couple of minutes away from being the team that won the South, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're sitting there saying, wait a minute. And then eventually, you know, like all these games, eventually the better team wears you down and wins. I think to me, watching that 49er game, I think the weather was a great equalizer in the game. I think that really helped Green Bay. It helped Green Bay's defense for sure. I think San Francisco was the better team, and we're getting the better team. But let's be clear, the Packers are not really a 7 seed the way they were playing and the way Love was playing offensively and the way their offensive line can pass protect. Whereas I really believe Houston was probably not quite a 4 seed. They won the South, but what we saw is a team that's young. It's still not quite where it needs to go. It's got a great future with this quarterback. He's tremendous. If they lose Bobby Slovic and they have to change offenses, that's when you start to worry a little bit about where they can go, because he's been very good in that system. Look, 6 turnovers on the road all year in 9 games. You know, he takes care of the football, which is the critical component. He didn't force anything yesterday.
And both of these teams, to your point, totally deserve a lot of credit, because you look at this Houston team that won 3 games a year ago. The Texans won as many games this year, including the playoffs, as the previous 3 seasons combined. Even though we in the preseason said, hey, this is a team that can be better than maybe people expect, I don't think anybody expected them to be a team that was playing in the divisional round. And with Green Bay as well, Jordan Love stepping in there, the youngest team in the National Football League this season, for them to make it to this point, I mean, kudos for two young teams that are certainly going to be on the rise here and a threat for, you would hope, years to come. But okay, with this AFC side of things, Michael, who between the Bills and Chiefs, who are going to be playing later today, which by the way, we are seeing a 3 once again at DraftKings right now, who would present the biggest test to Baltimore?
I think Buffalo, just because of Allen, you know, his ability to make plays. But this Baltimore defense is really good. They have great scheme. They can create some issues. Look, Kansas City, you know, with Mahomes is tremendous. But I think Baltimore matches up to Kansas City. That Pacheco, and he won't run it enough to really create a problem, whereas Buffalo's run ratio has really improved. And Baltimore will move the football, I think. To me, Baltimore will move the football on Buffalo. Will they move it on Kansas City? Yeah, because if Kansas City gets in a man-to-man game, it really favors Baltimore, because there's going to be some receiver they can't cover, whether it's Beckham, whether it's Likely, whether it's Andrews, who will be back, whether it's, you know, Bateman, whether it's Aguilar. They're going to have a hard matchup. And the way they blitz and all that, you're going to sit there and say, well, they blitzed. Houston blitzed. Yeah, Houston blitzed. But I think it was more of a, wait a minute, we're not ready for this yet. Wait a minute, we didn't practice any of this stuff here. We weren't ready for all these overload pressures and five-man dogs and all that stuff. So now let's adjust it, and let's get back to our rhythm, three-stop passing game, and all of a sudden Lamar's good. When you're going into Kansas City, you're going to expect Spagnuolo's going to blitz you, so that's going to be the issue. I think Baltimore, Buffalo, the way they play would give Baltimore a little trouble. I think Baltimore's the best team in the AFC. Yeah. I think they proved that yesterday. I think they're going to continue to prove that. They're connected. I do think this is the year of the Harbaugh.
Yeah, and I gave you those odds a little bit earlier with San Francisco still being the favorite, and I don't know how much of that has to do with liability as well as them being one of the top teams in the NFL right now, but after watching those games and after watching both of those teams down the stretch, like in my mind, Baltimore should be the favorite right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Baltimore and all this nonsense. Remember we talked on the show about analytics and how back analytics doesn't apply to the current day. And I think that was pretty true. You know, people were trying to make the case. See, Lamar's not good. Lamar, I got a text from a buddy of mine who said, oh, I shouldn't have bet Lamar in the playoffs. I should know better. Now it's 31-10. You win the cover easily, right? I think it was more of an adjustment game than it was Lamar not playing good. And I think Lamar in this passing game it's a different offense in Baltimore. If that would have been the Roman offense yesterday and they would have been struggling to run the football, you know, Houston might have beaten them. So I think at the end of the day, because they have diversity in their passing game and because Lamar can throw it, they were able to do it. I mean, the guy's 16 for 22. He only threw 6 incomplete passes. Yep. I don't know, you know, what more. Can we stop the talk about he can't play well in the playoffs? Can we stop that? Well, Houston's not a good team. Okay. Well, keep coming up with it.
No, it truly is remarkable how quick people are to jump on someone's struggles. Like Lamar Jackson struggles in the first half. Oh, yeah, that's the MVP. Okay, why don't you watch the second half, buddy, and see what happens. Baltimore again, 2-1 to win the Super Bowl. Second shortest shot on the board. We'll be right back getting into the two divisional round games coming up today. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with our free VSiN daily newsletter. Today's newsletter, no surprise, best bets with a heavy focus on today's divisional round games. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox, absolutely free, every single day. VSiN.com/newsletter is where you can subscribe. And we're going to get into those divisional round games now here on the Lombardi Line, starting with probably what we assume is going to be the game of the weekend. And that's after we had a very closely contested fun one last night with the Packers and 49ers, but Chiefs taking on the Buffalo Bills for the first time in Patrick Mahomes' tenure on the road in Buffalo. We are seeing the Bills now a 3-point home favorite, total at 45.5, Michael, and the weather we assume is going to be cold again, but we also just saw both of these teams have success in frigid temps last week.
Right. And both teams, you know, didn't alter their offense, right? They threw the football. They tried to throw the ball. The Kansas City game was brutally cold. They had no interest in not throwing it, right? And in the Steeler game, the Bills were really good. No turnovers, were able to throw the ball, make plays. They ran it really well. Mahomes is 8-1-1 as a dog in his career, right? Mm-hmm. The line has been at 3. And when it gets to 3, as Mike Palm said on Thursday, it goes right back to 2.5. Now, DraftKings New Jersey has it at 2.5. For me, this is going to be, we know that Bernard isn't going to play, the inside linebacker. So now they're Milano, Bernard, they're two guys that start the season, mainstay of the defense, right, are not going to play. The green dot player probably will be A.J. Klein, who was with the Bills before, kind of has bounced around. He knows the system. He's not going to be able to play as well as he's going to need to play. The challenge is going to be for Buffalo. I assume Rasul Douglas is going to play, is the challenge for Buffalo is going to be is, can they get pressure? See, I think all this talk about Mahomes on the road is ridiculous. It has nothing to do with Mahomes. Mahomes is going to play good. The problem it could be, Stormy, is this offensive line of the Chiefs, I would not say is an elite offensive line. Okay. This offensive line of the Chiefs has struggled. We've seen it at home. We've watched them play at home with their tackle situation, with Taylor, you know, not playing particularly well. Donovan Smith, you know, struggling. We got him in the backfield half the time. Taylor lines up like he's a wing on a punt protection team. So, you know, that's going to be the key to the game. Can this offensive line protect on the road with crowd noise? We saw Houston struggle with it. I think that's the essence of the game. I think that's the essence of the game. I do not think Mahomes is going to break down, but I do think this offensive line is going to get tested inside. Trey Smith, Tooney, Humphrey, those guys are going to get tested. And if they can't protect, you know, if they can't protect, then it's going to be a problem. We saw Cincinnati go in there last year and really dominate the front with backup offensive linemen. On the road, right? We saw it on the road last year. Can it be done? I think so. And then if they get into this blitz game, which Kansas City wants to do, you know, then all of a sudden you better make damn sure you can get Josh Allen on the ground. You better make damn sure you can get him on the ground because, you know, we saw this yesterday. If you're playing man and you don't tackle the guy, he takes off. It's 35 yards. The longest play the Baltimore Ravens had offensively yesterday was the run by Lamar Jackson.
To continue going through these injuries, if you want to put that graphic back up on the screen, for Buffalo, you mentioned a couple of those big names in Terrell Bernard being unavailable and likely getting Rasul Douglas back. Teron Johnson also, by the way, cleared concussion protocol. That'll be important for them on the back end defensively. Christian Benford also out. Taylor Rapp out for the second straight game. And offensively, no Gabe Davis, once again, who's dealing with a knee sprain. So maybe another opportunity where you can target a Dalton Kincaid or a Khalil Shakir, for example, for the Chiefs. No Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, although no love lost there with KT unavailable. So expect Rashee Rice again to get the bulk of those. And maybe this is a Travis Kelce day, somebody who has struggled to get in the end zone as of late. Michael, could Travis Kelce come alive if he and Patrick Mahomes are dialed in?
Right. And I think this is a Pacheco day, right? Like the first game, Pacheco didn't play. The first game, but they had Edwards-Helaire, you know, and his longest run of that day was 7 yards. So, you know, they're a better run team when Pacheco plays, and they're going to have to run the football. I mean, the last time they played them at home, they threw it 43 times. 43 times for 271 yards. So you're not going on the road and throwing it 43 times. I'm just telling you, that's a hard thing to do, as great as Mahomes is. So they're going to have to handle that. And Pacheco gives this offense some identity. And over the last couple of weeks, when he's been healthy, they've got toughness, they run, and it'll take some of the pressure off the offensive line. Last time they played, they did a great job on Josh Allen. He had 10 carries for 32 yards. If they come out of this game with 10 carries, 32 yards, Chiefs are going to win. The Chiefs will win. I mean, Diggs had 6 yards a catch. Like, they were not, like, this notion, it's a little bit like the same notion about the 49er defense, right? How great they are, and you can't move the ball. This Bill offense under Brady has improved tremendously. Well, you know, yeah, they've run the ball more, and they have been much better in the run game. But they haven't really been better in terms of throwing the football. The leading pass catcher in the last game was Cook. Remember, he caught the touchdown pass for 27 yards down the seam. They kind of got things going. I think this is two defensive teams. I think the under is strongly in play here, Stormy. I think both teams will have a hard time really getting it going. Let me just check here real quick what the under over total is.
45.
It opened
half.
At 40. It opened at 48 and it's down to 45 and a half.
And I'm totally with you there from an under standpoint. And actually, Michael, my favorite way to bet this is, you know how much I love a teaser. What can we say? Yeah. It's who I am at this point. And I've been having a lot of success with them here in the playoffs. So we're going to keep it rolling today.
Absolutely. You know, so, pat yourself on the back.
So hear me
absolutely.
Out. Absolutely. So Chiefs, we tease that up, get them to, 8.5 points or so. So you get through the 3, through the 7. And then we'll tease the total up to 52 and take the under there. Because this is, to your point, I think this is an under game in general, but give yourself a little bit of that safety net. The Chiefs have been an ATM for unders throughout the course of the season, 13-5 to the under, including their last four straight, as well as five of their last six. And Buffalo, too, has been a heavier under team, 11-7 to the under this year. So I like that play. I think we have this mentality of it's Patrick Mahomes and it's Josh Allen. These are high-flying, explosive offensive teams, and this year has just been a different year for them.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're completely right on this one. I mean, this is a hard game, and it has nothing to do with weather this under. Is both teams, I feel like, are going to try to run the football a little bit. Mm-hmm. Buffalo, we know this. Their run numbers are going way up. They want to run the ball. I mean, they're a better run team now than they ever were at any point in the season. And so I think they're going to run the ball. And look, it's going to come down to, can Josh Allen protect the football? You know, I mean, he has had a hard time of not, you know, he's had 78 interceptions since 2018, the most in the NFL. Ooh. He's had 59 fumbles in the NFL, the most in the NFL, you know, so it just, to me, in playoffs, he's had four interceptions and two fumbles in the last nine games. He's got to protect the ball. He has to protect the ball. And that's going to be the key. And I just think the way they have been running the ball, it moves the clock. And mm-hmm. it moves the clock where the point total is a little lower. You know, last night, what were we at? We were at 24-21. That's a 45 game. Now, you know, to get – and that game could have easily got to 52, but it didn't. You know, missed field goal here. You know, a missed opportunity in the red zone there. What was – Green Bay was 2-for-5 in the red zone. There's why your under doesn't hit. Both teams are good red zone defenses.
Yep. And as far as it goes for this Chiefs-Bills game, credit Josh Allen, too, because in that first game in the playoffs, turnover-free football, and historically, as a postseason quarterback, his touchdown-to-interception ratio is like, I think, 20-something to just four interceptions, so been much better in that area. We will continue to preview this game, by the way, with Bills beat reporter Matt Parrino coming up next, but real quickly, last 2 minutes before we hit the break, Michael, initial thoughts for you on Tampa in Detroit taking on the Lions. We're seeing that number sitting 6 right now, but it's been as high as 7 and as low as 5.5.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is a game where it's going to be one-dimensional, right? They can't run the ball, especially on the road in Detroit with loud crowd. Tampa's not a great run team to begin with. They're going to have to figure out a way to offset a lack of running game, a little bit like Houston was trying to do with the reverses, the bubbles, all those things. For me, when you go back and watch the first game, the front of the Bucs, the front of the Lions really gave the Bucs offensive line trouble. They put Hutchinson inside. They rushed him off the guards. And we know this about Mayfield. If you get inside on him, if you get into the paint, he plays small. He's a small quarterback who plays small. And the Lions have got to really control the paint in this game. This game's all about the Lions' defense. Forget about their coverage. It's about getting in front of Mayfield, making him have to throw the ball over the wall. Hutchinson beating the right guard. Hutchinson inside. McNeil pushing the guards back. And they'll tip passes. The first game, the first interception was a tip pass at the line. And they intercepted the ball and they got 3 points off of it. So for me, that's the key to the game. I truly believe the Lions will have enough ability to handle the pressure and enough ability to make some plays down the field. And if Goff just plays within himself, I think it's a tough game for the Bucs.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel fairly confident that the Lions are going to win this game. I'm just still not sure what I want to do with the spread at this point, but maybe we can get somebody to help, you know, talk me through one way or the other before the show is up today. Total sitting 49.5. And one thing I do know for sure, or at least I feel fairly confident in, is that we're going to get some points on the board in this one. We're going to hit the break here real quickly. When we come back again, continuing to dive into that Bills-Chiefs matchup, Matt Parrino is at Highmark Stadium. Get the latest on the weather and the injury report. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL postseason, is bringing you an offer that'll help make the playoffs that much more electrifying. New customers can bet $5 on any game and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. All you got to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use our code VSIN. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The code again, VSIN, V-S-I-N. The crown is yours. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back into the Lombardi line. Excited to welcome in now ESPN football analyst and two-time Super Bowl champ, Booger McFarland, on the line as we saw the Ravens and 49ers both get through to their respective conference championships last night. You've been there, done that. You know what it takes to win it all. Who is the more dangerous one seed based on what you've seen here so far, Boog?
Well, I think you'd have to say Baltimore. I mean, they looked the part. Their defense is playing outstanding. Lamar, for the first time this season, I thought yesterday really kind of put the cape on and was kind of vintage Lamar running the football, 100 yards rushing. They started kind of slow, but in the end, I think Baltimore really looks the part. And they're going to be a tough out. It's going to take a team that can do two things to beat them. One, you got to be able to match their physicality, because in every game at some point they're going to line up and they're going to bring Ricard in and they're going to put the tight ends there and they're going to challenge you physically. And then you're going to have to do what I thought D'Amico Ryans did a really good job of, adjusting to Lamar. Everyone wants to kind of sit back and be afraid of Lamar Jackson. I think it's proven by Pittsburgh and other teams that see them a lot. And even D'Amico yesterday, I thought did a really good job. When you want to get Lamar uncomfortable, you got to bring at least five and sometimes six. You got to bring people at him in the pocket and take away his ability to see free grass. So it's going to be interesting to see as they go forward how many teams try that theory that we saw yesterday from D'Amico Ryans.
Hard to, you know, I mean, I think D'Amico's front, because of the speed and athleticism, allowed him to do that. Sometimes I'm not sure that a lot of these teams have the speed to catch up to him. But I thought Lamar showed something yesterday, Booger. I thought he showed the ability to adjust and throw the short passing game with accuracy, with rhythm, with timing. And to me, I agree with you. The completeness of their offense makes them the most dangerous team that I'm watching come playoff time.
Yeah, I would agree. And if we're going to, you know, give Lamar credit, you got to give offensive coordinator Todd Monken credit also, because they got sacked the last two plays of the first half. And, I mean, the heat was coming. It was a tie game. And all of a sudden they come out. And I thought the adjustments, to your point, Mike, the short passing game, the design quarterback run, you know, they faked the power and did the naked bootleg with Ronnie Stanley out front lead blocking. Those are some of the subtle adjustments that Todd Monken made. To say, okay, D'Amico, if you're going to bring pressure, you're going to bring five and six, how do we counter that? We're going to counter that by the short passing game and the design quarterback run.
Meanwhile, it is still the San Francisco 49ers who are the favorite right now to win this year's Super Bowl. What were some things that you took away from the performance yesterday and what they need to do if they really want a chance to win it all in a year that they seem poised to throughout the most of the season?
You know, like, the biggest thing I took away is that I think if you're Green Bay, you're going to sit back and say, we lost that game. The game was 7-6 at halftime, and Green Bay had outplayed the 49ers. They went for it on fourth down, didn't get it. They kicked two field goals, and they outplayed the 49ers. And then at some point, again, a physical football team, Kyle Shanahan, finally said, you know what? Let's give a football to Christian McCaffrey. Let's throw it to George Kittle. And the first touchdown drive in the second half that they had, that's how they got it. It was big play to Kittle, long run by McCaffrey, and that kind of got the thing rolling. But my biggest takeaway really is wasn't about the 49ers, even though they made some plays late. I thought Purdy was average at best yesterday. You know, I was sitting with a quarterback that said, he's not comfortable. I said, what do you mean? It's like, well, he's taking the glove off. He's put the glove on. He's taking the glove back off. He and I are about the same size. He's having trouble with the wet football. I said, but it stopped raining. He's like, yeah, but the grass is still wet. And so that's something to take a look at, because he did not play well yesterday. He had the one good drive at the end of the game, and they won, and everybody says all is well. But if you're Kyle Shanahan, and Mike, I know you like to do this, you go back and look at the tape, you got to ask yourself, okay, how am I going to beat Tampa or Detroit? More importantly, how am I going to beat Baltimore or Kansas City or Buffalo if my quarterback – is inconsistent the way he was yesterday. And you can blame it on the rain, but if you go back to last month of the season, Brock Purdy hasn't played well, and that's got to be really alarming to Kyle Shanahan.
You know, I agree. I think to me, but I'm sure Kyle's going to feel like, okay, we kind of worked our way through it. I don't think their line played very well either, Booger. I thought that the Green Bay defensive front was in control. I thought they gave him some pressure too, and I'm not absolving. I'm with you. I don't think he played well. I think the football bothered him, his accuracy, you know, I thought all those things. But what I was most impressed was, I thought the game would be a higher scoring game. I thought it might get to the 30s because I don't believe that all this rhetoric that the Niners are this elite defense. I think you can throw the ball on them. Now, Jordan Love was not good on the last four drives of the game. He struggled. But to me, there is a weakness in this 49er defense. And last night, you being the great defensive lineman that you were in the league, that defensive line didn't really exert itself against the Packers.
You know, it's crazy you mention it. I sent out a tweet about midway through the first quarter, and I said, a team that's built on rushing the passer really isn't good at rushing the passer anymore. And it sounds crazy, but if you look at the 49ers, Bosa didn't have an impact on the game. Armstead, Hargrave, like those guys didn't have the impact on the game that you expect a defensive line that has, Bosa's making, what, 25 a year. Armstead is close to 20. Hargrave to 20. Like, you got a lot of money tied up in that defensive line. And I thought, for the most part, the Packer offensive line neutralized them. And so, there's been some back and forth all year long because Steve Wilks has heard about this great defensive line, but he's also watching the film where they aren't getting sacks. And so when Steve starts to blitz, they go, whoa, we don't blitz here. And they're like, okay, well, if you're not getting to the quarterback, and I don't blitz, now my secondary looks vulnerable. And so there's got to be some give and take. And if you follow the 49ers all season long, there's kind of been a little back and forth between the new guy on the block, Steve Wilks, and the old defense that has a lot of veteran players on it. And if you watch the game last night, I think if you're Detroit or you're Tampa and you go to San Francisco, you got to say, we feel really comfortable going against this defense because the Packers ran the football. And Jordan Love was pretty comfortable back there. So I'm with you. The defense that was so vaunted a couple of years ago with Bosa and Armstead and Hargrave and all, and now we got Chase Young and we're just going to overwhelm you with our defensive line. They really didn't do that last night. And that's really alarming for a team with so many resources at that one position.
And as a 49ers fan, I hate seeing it. ESPN's Booger McFarland joining us here on the Lombardi Line. Your former team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, played seven seasons there, won a Super Bowl with that group. They've got the Lions coming up here in just a little bit, a few hours away. What's your expectations for the Bucs today in Ford Field, taking on a Lions team that has waited so long for this opportunity?
Yeah, you know, that's what they said last week about the Lions. They waited so long, and I got two concerns, and I think it's one for each team. If you're the Detroit Lions and you heard about everything, we hadn't won a playoff game in 100 years and you win last week, are you automatically going to assume that it's going to be the same way this week, and do they come out flat? Do they come out saying, we've already broken the streak, now what? And so I want to see how the Lions play. And number two, if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you got to survive the first 5 to 7 minutes of the game. And so it wouldn't surprise me, and we've seen this a couple of times already, Mike and Stormy, win the toss, take the ball, because you want to get off to a good start. Even though the analytics say you win the toss, you defer so you can get the ball at the start of the second half and you have an opportunity to control the middle eight. And so it's just going to be interesting to me if Todd Bowles and the Bucks win the toss, do you take the ball and try to quiet this crowd early, get your team comfortable, get Baker comfortable, because if Baker Mayfield is comfortable at Ford Field, the Buccaneers have enough weapons offensively and enough weapons defensively to go in there and get the job done.
Yeah, I agree. This game's going to come down to the defensive tackles. When they put Hutchinson inside in the first game, that really was a problem for the Bucs to block him. And if you get inside of Baker, like we talked about with Purdy, he'll play small. And if he plays small, it's going to be hard for the Bucs. That's the way I see it. I agree with you. I think, to me, it's all about comfort if he's playing small inside.
Yeah, that's interesting, because if you look at the Bucs, other than Tristan Wirfs, that offensive line has been inconsistent. They got a lot of young guys on that offensive line. Jensen is not playing at center. He's been out all season. And kind of where the Buccaneers, you know, this year was supposed to be a rebuilding year. They got about $80 million in dead money from the Tom Brady years, and they kind of took it in the offensive mind, starting a couple of rookies, couple of second-year guys. And so, yeah, if you're Detroit, you got to take advantage of what I call the weakness, because if Baker's got time, his skill position guys of Edwards and Godwin and the tight end Otten and this new guy, Trey Palmer, they got a lot of weapons out there. So it's going to be imperative of Detroit to make sure they make Baker Mayfield uncomfortable.
We're up against it, Boog, but yes or no, is Jaden Daniels going to leapfrog Drake May for second QB off the board?
Well, he shouldn't leapfrog him. His performance this season has shown you that he's the better quarterback.
There you go.
There you go, Booger. I love it. Thank you, man.
Later.